So welcome back after lunch. I hope you're all fed and watered and ready. We've got two sessions this afternoon focusing on sustainability, particularly around the cabin. And the first of these will look at cabin waste and set the scene of the problem that we're facing as a sector. And we've got a great panel here who are from within the sector and outside, who will start to give us a bit of level of granularity around those problems we face and the potential solutions. And then after the break, we're going to take three organisations will join us on stage, and we'll look at what they're doing for the sector and how they're also trying to improve the sustainability of their own organisations as well. So let me set the scene. My name is... Am I doing it or are you? Is there a clicker or? Yes. Oh, it's up there. Okay, better get it. Okay. Yeah. We'll get to the plus and minus button in a minute. So my name is Matt Crane. I've been in aviation for about 22 years, primarily on the provision of food and beverage. And in 2019, a group of us got together across the sector to form the ASF, or the Aviation Sustainability Forum. And we are very much an organisation that is made up of stakeholders across the in-flight supply chain for passenger products and services. And we are looking at how we find solutions to the problem of cabin waste, which at the moment, particularly on international waste, many of you in the audience may know or may not know, but we are forced to incinerate or landfill cabin waste. And this is a real problem for our sector in terms of the 2050 glide that we're all heading towards and reaching net zero, in that we need to actually stop this happening and find solutions to stop it happening and capture the benefits of the circular economy. And the mission of the ASF is to solve that problem by working together in an open coalition across the sector. So it's very much about bringing everybody together to find the solutions that we need. To give you some context of what we're facing as a sector, I'm going to start above cabin waste, the sector as a whole. Here we are around 2019. We had 4 billion passengers. We're pretty much back to those numbers right now. We currently have 26,000 commercial aircraft, and we contribute about 2% of the global CO2e. And if any of you saw the Economist report of the 14th of May, you'll know that our contribution of CO2e is not proportionate to actually the GDP that we generate as a result. So we're already out of kilter. But we've got a problem, because over the next 27 years, we're forecast to double in passenger numbers. We will go from 4.5 to 10 billion, according to IATA. So the problem doubles. And at that point, we will move to 47,000 commercial aircraft flying. We don't yet know what type of aircraft they're going to be and how efficient and effective they will be. But the danger is that unless we green in the way that we've set out to do through our ACO target of net zero at 2050, we will be 20% plus of global CO2e. And the reason why that's a big figure is because other industries are greening quicker than us, and we've got work to do. We know that the main focus of that, and this is from the Mission Possible Partnership, and you know, if you don't know who they are, look them up. They're doing some work on aviation, trying to work out how we get to our 2050 target. But you'll see on there that biofuels and SAF are by far our biggest issue, as well as the greening of aircraft in terms of materials and design. But to give you a context of the problem on that one that we face, and it's quite right that the industry should be focusing on this issue more than any other, in 2022, we produce 300 million litres of SAF. If we're to actually get to the 60 to 70% target for sustainable aviation fuels as a percentage of all fuel by 2030 to 50, we need 450 billion litres on current passenger numbers. Cabin waste is less than this, but it is what our passengers see, and here we are in a passenger experience conference. And I doubt there's any airline in here that doesn't know that passengers are getting increasingly agitated by waste on board and they're looking for solutions. At the moment, if you looked between 2023 and 2030, we will burn or incinerate up to 44.5 million tons of waste. To give you an idea of what that is, That is the equivalent of 24 million family cars. That is every single car on the road today in Spain. That's what we're doing. The figures on the bottom, I won't go on to. You can see them. That is uneaten food and the waste that's generated out of that. But the key figure on there around the waste is that 7.1 billion that we are spending as an industry on waste and waste management and non-circularity. It's a cost. And that's where the value lies in terms of trying to actually bring in the benefits of circularity. The issue that we have is this regulation. I won't dwell on it, but the coalition that we're looking to try and form is trying to actually present the case to the regulator by aligning as a sector to come up with solutions that allows them to consider a move from Category 1 classification of waste to Category 3. We need aviation waste, cabin waste, to be classified the same as restaurant and household waste if we're to get to embrace the circular economy. It's not the same for domestic flights, but it is a big one for international, and the figures I've given you of that. So we must align on common solutions. And our sector, you need to look at it as an advantage because it's got some distinct advantages, which we will talk about in a moment with the panel. It is that it's very regulated. We're used to regulation. We work well with regulation, but if we don't actually find solutions, we can expect more of it. But we have a high degree of transparency. We have a manifest that know that every single product that's loaded on an aircraft is written down, and we know what's coming off. So we actually have great data within the supply chain. We're not that good at sharing it. We also have the benefit of hubs. Most of our waste comes through big airports, and the hub airports of the largest carriers in the world. They have the opportunity to trap that waste and manage it better than they are doing. It's not like household waste, which disappears to a variety of different sites. It's one, and we have the ability to actually look at that. Quick wins are there in that while aviation is quite a hard sector to abate, solutions for cabin waste do exist now, and we will hear from Jonathan in a moment on some of those that are perhaps open for us. And of course, this waste could be used to help us with that problem on SAF in terms of that 2-for-1. So the resistance that we have, and this is based on 50 interviews plus that the ASF did across the supply chain, is that we have resistance on political, policy and industry. Political will at the moment does not perceive that cabin waste is a tier one issue for the sector. They are focused on SAF more than anything else, and we need to address that. It is only when politicians talk to regulators that we end up with a change that we need. Policy-wise, there is no single message going to the regulator around the solutions that we are looking for as an industry. We are all doing things individually. Think of a graphic equalizer of everybody moving the slider up and down. The noise that comes out is mixed. We need one solution and one coalition trying to work out what we should be doing so that we come out with the right solution at the other end. Then the regulator is saying that they will listen to us. And the last is, as a supply chain, whilst we're very good at moving product through it, it's highly competitive. There is a lot of vested interest in there. When you disrupt supply chains, there will be winners and there will be losers. And we have to find a way of aligning that supply chain to accept that that will happen. But we need to take that 7.1 billion, capture some of it, and put that back into the supply chain to iron out the inequalities. So that leads me nicely on to set you up, now that you've got all of that lovely information fresh in your head and buzzing with those numbers, to the panel. And I'm very, very pleased to introduce Nani Berry, who is the Director of Customer Experience for Iberia, who've done some excellent work in this field, and we'll hear from Melanie in a moment. Tony Schifano, who has spent a lot of time working within the health sector around trying to get circularity on health waste, which you could well imagine is more hazardous in many ways than food waste. Jonathan, who has spent a considerable amount of time looking at emerging technologies on really experiential recycling methods that are coming through and looking at that sector. And Anne, who has spent a lot of time working in the sector on products and services with many airlines. And Anne will talk to us about some work that Tony and Jonathan and herself are doing, and we'll come in at the close. So your panel. I've gone one slide too far. If you could take that one down, I'd appreciate it. That's the next session. Melanie, let me come to you first. I gave you some stats there. Help me just understand a little bit, and the audience understand, what Iberia is doing in this space at the moment.
Well, Iberia have been working on sustainability for the last 5 years, probably a little bit longer. And we started off with a project called Zero Cabin Waste. And it's a project designed within the constraints that we can work within. So exactly as you explained, we restrain because of the laws around the disposal of international waste. But we put in a program to recycle newspapers, magazines, aluminium cans. Most recently, we started with glass bottles, corks, things like that. We've also replaced all single-use plastics where we can. Where we have a solution, then we've replaced them, so we no longer have plastic bags on our pillows or blankets or headrests or headsets. We have taken all the packaging away from the immunity kit. So we're kind of doing what I would say are all of the quick wins, the kind of the low-hanging fruit. And then slowly we're starting to tackle the more difficult things. There are many, many things we'd like to do, but there isn't solutions out there. So we haven't yet found a solution that we can afford for things like plastic cups, coffee cups, things that are really big issues in the world. You know, I think there's a disposable coffee cup mountain from all of the coffee that people are drinking. So we haven't found solutions to those kind of things yet, but we're trying to replace things with, where we have no solution, with recycled plastic, and we're working in that way. We're also trying to tackle food waste. Obviously, our customers come on board and they expect to be fed. But we're trying to put smart, little, tiny step changes in place. So this summer we're going to be starting, we've just trialled it actually, a new initiative where if we've got meals left at the end of the flight, we're just going to do a PA to say, hey, if you're still feeling hungry, come to the galley and get some more food. You know, it's not going to be an Oliver Twist moment. You know, you definitely will be able to get fed. And, you know, you're helping us. We don't want any waste to be left at the end of the day. It's a really fine balance for us because we need to meet customers' expectations, but we're trying to be sustainable at the same time. So trying to find the balance is tricky. We do lots and lots of research. And I think it was Anais said in the previous presentation in here from Airbus that when we do the research, our customers say they want to be sustainable, but actually in reality, they don't make the sustainable choices. It's kind of subconsciously they don't do it. We had the same thing with, would you like fruit or chocolate? Everyone said fruit, but then pick chocolate. So it's the same kind of thing. Yeah. So we're really trying to find the balance all of the time.
And when we did those 50 interviews, of which, thank you, Iberia, you were one, with the asset, one word came out when we asked people about the supply chain end to end and for airlines, and that was frustrating.
Yeah, totally.
Why is it frustrating?
Because there isn't really an answer. So we have three big problems. One, which you talked about, which is no matter what we try and do, the majority of our waste goes to be incinerated. So it's hard for us to communicate all of our initiatives because if you research behind it, all those great things go and get incinerated. So we recently, last summer, we introduced wooden cutlery. Great initiative, but then it gets incinerated. So we have the first one is the fact that we incinerate everything. The second problem for us, which causes the frustration, is the availability of products. You know, it's very expensive if we can find it. And there is then the third thing, which is the question about what is more sustainable. So yes, weight is a big factor for us in many, many things, but you know, is rotable sustainable or is disposable more sustainable? I think there are pros and cons everywhere, and you know, I don't have the answers. I look at what all of my colleagues are doing in other airlines, and we all have a different idea of what that looks like.
Okay, I'm going to bring in Tony. Why don't you just give us a little bit of background? This guy is more passionate than I am on this subject, so I've got a real job to manage, Tony. Here. So, Tony, tell us in a nutshell a bit about Antos, and I'm interested to just try and understand what parallels you see between aviation and the work that you've done in healthcare.
Do you mind if I stand up?
You can do whatever you like.
Hi, everyone. I'm from New York, and I only have 3 minutes. let me just say how challenged you are. It's incredibly challenged. And with all due respect to all of you, I wish you were all from the O suite of whatever organization you're representing. But most important, I'd like you to take back a message, because this is a time that a lot of courage is necessary, because you are part of a transition that's happening globally across industries around the world that are setting the stage for the next generation that will be sitting here. And that really leads me to the education of young people. And please go back to all of your children's schools and make sure that they're learning about this in school, because this subject has to be weaved into the fabric of their character. That's why we're having such a difficult time today trying to do something different. We need these children to be something different. But that's another two-hour discussion. You have been throwing away things your whole life, and I'm here to tell you that there's no place called away. It never goes away. So stop throwing things away. And how big is away? Well, in New York, we have a landfill called the Freshkills Landfill, and it is the largest man-made object in the history of our civilization. And I want you to really hear what I just said. It's the biggest thing that man has ever made since the beginning of time. And the great stats that Matt just showed you is the tip of the iceberg globally around how much waste material is being thrown away every day across every industry. It is absolutely frightening. And thank goodness that today we have scientific data that supports the climate action that is necessary by all of us. So let's get back to my 3 minutes. In healthcare,
you've had two, Tony.
In healthcare, I've been doing this for 35 years. So let me just say that. Antos Environmental came out of a waste disposal company because I used to pick up medical waste 40 years ago, and I would laugh all the way to the bank. And your guys at the airports, who you never talk to, who we never even bring up, the garbage guy, you think he's like wearing smelly overalls and drives a dirty truck. This guy's in Armani, and he's driving limousines. He's making a fortune, laughing all the way to the bank, taking your garbage, loving the regulators, putting you in a corner that you have to incinerate everything at $7.9 billion. It is the biggest travesty, and we have to overcome that. And you have a financial inspiration to do that. So make sure he's sitting at the table. But how we did it in healthcare in the United States is we formed something called Hospitals for a Healthy Environment. It was back in the 1980s, and we asked for volunteers, health systems, to sign on, along with the Department of Environmental Protection, U.S. government, and we formed this group, and we got commitments from health systems to not only fund, but begin to change behavior. And that's what this is about. I mean, there are enough papers written, there are enough white papers. This is really about people. This is not about a new cup. We don't need another new cup. We have plenty of technology out there that could support the changes that you see ahead of you. But it's about your behavior. What your industry needs is a cultural transformation. You can be environmentally committed and be Delta. You could be Jiffy Lube. It doesn't matter what you do, it's who you are. That's what I get back to the children, because they'll be something different. Right now, we need to choose this cultural transformation. So the behavior of not only the passengers, but the staff, the CEOs, the entire industry has to shift. And that takes a lot of courage, because there's a lot of dollars involved. I'll tell you a quick story.
Quick question, Tony.
Quick question.
So, just you heard what Mel was talking about in terms of some of the challenges. You've talked about the need for coalition and people in the industry coming together. Just very, very quickly, help us understand why Antos was successful through that coalition.
We were able to get into the organizations themselves and through education, change process, track and trace. Today, you have a much better way of doing it with AI. We should have AI at every aircraft, creating analytics about what comes off every aircraft, what goes on every aircraft. All of those planes are sitting in an airport. They all go into like one giant garbage guy who drives it away and burns it all. At God knows how much, I know San Francisco, Donata pays $50,000 a month just for that. That's absurd. So it really needs to be changed from an education perspective and process perspective. And there needs to be now analytics that support it. The data, you have no data. You can't tell me how much is coming off or what is coming off. So that's one answer. But desire is the strongest, right? Again, back to my story. We help manage countries, Puerto Rico, China, Africa. In Puerto Rico, I went to, I know. In Puerto Rico, I went to the garbage guy and asked him to re-engineer his company to make the same $100 million he's making. And he said, no. So money is a huge obstacle. And that's something that has to be overcome.
Joe, thank you.
I'll get back to you.
Yeah.
Thank you. That was more than 3 minutes.
A lot. You've taken it. Jonathan, there was a reference made there to AI. There was a reference made to smart recycling. You're working through your company at 2030, looking at some of those entrepreneurial tech that's coming through. Just help us understand what you're seeing, because I think one thing that exists in aviation is we're not actually that cognizant of what the future of waste management looks like.
Yeah. And you know, I heard Melanie mention recycled content, plastic recycled content, as being something to source in aviation, but it can also be a product in aviation. And we're, you know, if you look at the aviation space, and it is a bit of a black box, admittedly, at a macro level, each airline may have some data, but we don't have the complete picture. But there's a lot of opportunity to do something innovative in plastics. And if you think of the concerns with the regulator around the contamination and the threat to flora and fauna, which we all have our own views on that. But nonetheless, if you look at the opportunities in plastics, one of the most obvious one is something where you would treat the plastic in a chemical way, in a thermal way, to ultimately produce a new feedstock for plastic. And that's something that I think a lot of airlines should be looking at. And that is a wonderful story in the industry, right? Plastics to plastics in aviation. And it's a great pitch to the regulators, too, to say, look, we're managing our problems. We're not simply a bad neighbor in terms of the amount of stuff that we're sending off-site and is subject to incineration or landfill. So I think that's something that we all want to think about. And there are similar kinds of stories with every other material. All right, and let's remember, the regulations and the regime are, 50 years old, 60 years old? Mm-hmm. And yet innovation's been taking place in every other industry. And at the same time, Matt, I'll throw this in because I think it's relevant. What we're seeing in the marketplace is a wonderful opportunity to monetize these things at last, right? Finally, we can make money on some of these activities instead of spending money. But the trick in making money is we need economies of scale. And so we need, one, to know exactly what the material is in its volume and its composition, and two, we need a coalition of the willing to put this together. And sometimes that coalition may even need to extend outside of aviation to make the numbers work. But certainly within aviation, if we were to go to industry and say, we have a need, we have an interest, here is the material, here's the opportunity, we will find parties that will fund it, we will find parties that will monetize it, we can likely credit it, as we talked about earlier.
Can I come back to you on that point? I mean, we've got this enormous sum of $7 billion being spent on waste disposal. Have you got any idea out of your experience of other sectors, what percentage of that could we legitimately capture? And what do you see it growing to? Because I'd imagine it could be quite small right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think, something in the range of 30 to 40% in the near term. And then in the longer term, if we ultimately do a better job in terms of tracking and tracing, I think it could be north of 50%.
50 and 60 in healthcare.
50 yeah. to 60%.
We reduce costs. Yeah. In some health systems, 72%.
Yeah. Okay. And when you say near term and you think about, our glide path towards 2050, are you thinking in that horizon or you?
No, dear God, no.
Sooner?
Yes, much sooner than that, yeah.
So if we were able to get the changes that we want, capturing value from the circular economy is open to us.
Yes, absolutely. And you know, as Tony was mentioning earlier, I mean, it's extortionist kind of pricing around the disposal of these materials, and it does nobody any benefit. So I think, you know, near term, we could very much in the near term start to see those savings, and ultimately everyone benefits, right? Ultimately there'll be an ability not only on the sustainability side but on the bottom line for everyone to participate. So I think that's the kind of thing we'd look at immediately, and maybe we're talking about 2026, 2027. Yeah. Once we get a better sense as to what the baseline is, until we get the baseline, we're not going to get a lot of people interested in investing.
Yeah.
So they're going to say, we need to know the data first. Give us the data, then we'll talk about how we can fund this.
Yeah. Now, I'm quite a sad guy because as a part-time thing, I like following garbage trucks and seeing exactly where they go and what's in them. And that's an education if you're ever bored on a Sunday or something like that. You know, it can get pretty interesting. But one thing that struck me is waste management is very, very heavy on infrastructure. So they've invested in the current way of you know, these incinerators are not cheap. So when we then start saying, well, we've got to put in different waste, what incentive is there for them to change? Or do they need policy and regulation themselves to push for change?
Well, yeah, and now you're talking about domestic politics, right? You're talking about what's happening on the ground in each country, in each state or province, maybe in each city. So what you're doing is inserting a disruptive activity within an existing relationship. And that's tricky. That's tricky. But ultimately, those in the room are paying the freight.
Yeah.
And if we collectively say, we're not doing this anymore, and if you're not on board, someone else will be, we'll find the industry is waiting, frankly, chomping at the bit to start to provide the kind of services to aviation that they're already providing in a number of other sectors where we see coalitions, where we see a tangible change in terms of sustainability. So I don't think we're going to have a problem getting those services. There will be some disruption and there will be some hurt feelings in the short term, but that has to happen for real change.
Mm.
Most of the airports and generators of waste go to the waste disposal company and ask them for help. And that's like asking the mice to guard the cheese.
Yeah.
These guys are making billions of dollars. They're not interested in waste reduction. Waste disposal is not waste management. Waste management is you, your brain, your hand, what you buy. That's waste management. Waste disposal is a separate industry. Waste Management Inc. in the U.S. does $55 billion a year. They're not interested in waste reduction. So we have to take them off the table. We have to disrupt everything before them. Our job is to give them one bag. That's our job.
Mm. Tony, you referenced AI. Jonathan, I think you've done some work in this space, haven't you?
Yes, that's correct.
Help us just understand how AI is around waste segregation, if you've got any experience there. But what is AI? What can AI do for us, this problem?
Well, look, I mean, I think that the first thing, and this is out of the Ellen MacArthur handbook, if anyone has been following those kind of policy initiatives. I mean, the first thing is to be able to track and trace, right, at the front end, understanding exactly what's going in there, and then hopefully at the back end, start to see solutions that start to make more sense. And so in terms of that learning, that machine learning, which is the core of AI, it's fully understanding what's happening in real time and making the kind of changes that ultimately lead to better economics.
Mm. It's a brilliant teacher because it can determine what's being thrown away, excuse the phrase, in real time, particularly food. And it educates the chef. Why did people toss so much salmon? Well, either the portion size was too big or they didn't like my recipe. And that's just a simple example of education. Why are there so many French fries being thrown away on a university property on Thursday? Like, we would never know those things. We'd never have the questions if we didn't have the analytics. And wouldn't it be interesting to put that on flights, right, so we can understand what is being tossed? And I think you're doing a fabulous job, by the way. And I don't think you should change what you're doing because you're set up for the change in regulation. Everyone should be doing what she's doing because someday the regulation will change and you'll be ready rather than take 2 years to get to where she's at.
Yeah. And Matt, let me say one thing about the cost. I mean, you asked me about the reduction in waste cost, but here's an opportunity to decrease costs in terms of catering, right? So another tangible near-term benefit of adopting something like AI in the industry. And if you go to other industries and say, we have AI, the industry is wide open to it, right? Everyone says, we're on board. How do we make this work? That should be the approach here as well. We can't be closeted and somewhat phobic around the benefits of something like that technology.
But we also have to be careful, because for me, my job is trying to take the human side as well. So it's hard for me to explain to a customer that we haven't got any food on board because actually the AI algorithms told me I didn't need to load any for you. So there
That's
is
the wrong provider.
Yeah, there is, for me, like, I think it's brilliant. And I think, you know, I really believe we all need to be the change that we expect to see in the world. But for me, my challenge is I have to meet our customers' expectations. So finding that balance is the real tricky thing for all of us as an industry, because when you are 30,000 feet up, you can't pop to the shop. So for me, it's how I do all these things, using all this technology, but still meeting the customer's expectations is the big challenge.
Yeah. I'm going to bring in Anne here. And you've had a lot of experience, many years in the sector. We've worked together. You've worked with everybody, I think, on the panel. What do you see the challenges for the sector going forward if we're to try and get the change that we want through regulation and get to a position where we can embrace the circular economy for cabin waste?
Well, I think one of the biggest challenges is collaboration. I think there is a lack of collaboration in this industry across the supply chain and the different stakeholders who have different interests, whether you look at logistics, catering, the airline, or what happens post-flight. Everyone has a different interest, so there is really a lack of collaboration to drive some significant change and make a difference in this industry.
Right. And when you think about that, what role do you think the airlines have? Because at the end of the day, they're feeding that supply chain end to end. What role do they have in trying to bring that together?
Well, I think the airlines definitely should take the driver's seat. They should be the ones deciding and defining what the other stakeholders within their supply chain are doing and how they should be doing it. Because at the end of the day, it's about their credentials, their sustainability credentials, not about the supply chain, because the customer doesn't know about all the operations that are behind it. So I think the airline really needs to bring back the driver's seat, make the decisions, and make sure that they have strong sustainability credentials, making a difference for the industry and their customers.
I'm going to come to the floor. Is there any questions from the floor that you'd like to ask? Well, there's lots. Joe, I'm definitely going to come to you in a moment. We had one over here.
Hello, Vincent Orensteer, Runway Girl Network. Thank you very much for a really interesting and thought-provoking discussion. I was just interested by one phrase that was sort of tossed out, which is threat to flora and fauna. I just think, obviously, you think about countries like Australia that want to protect their environment, make sure there's no cross-contamination. There are risks there, I think. And there's risks about why that waste would not want to be contaminated into another environment. And then there was also talk about track and trace. I mean, we have track and trace for tobacco products, works very well, not a threat to life. We've had test and trace, track and trace things for pandemics, which have not worked as well. And the risk here is very high. If these contaminants get into an environment, you can't get them out, essentially. So how would you make sure that doesn't happen? What would be the risks and how would you mitigate them if we were to change this for international flights?
Let me just get back to the comment around advanced recycling. So here we have, existing state is a closed bag, the material's treated as if it's highly hazardous, and it goes to an incinerator. In the new state, the material is still viewed as potentially hazardous, is put in a bag, and goes to a thermal or chemical process, which ultimately changes its molecular structure, right? So we're not talking about somebody cleaning bottles or you know, doing those kind of manual or mechanical things that I think still raise those concerns. And that may be an interim step, right? That we might get more comfortable over time, and we might, you know, this boogeyman may go away. But I think, you know, I hear you on that, and I don't think we need to reach that low at this point. There's many opportunities in the near term. So I think, and I think that's the term. I mean, that's sort of the concern, isn't it, Matt? Right? That's the threat to flora and fauna. That's what we'll hear in most countries in the world. But I think when we look at other industries, they've managed these concerns, and they've, you know, they've kind of delved deeper into those concerns and really understood them. And I think here we've got this sort of immediate reaction that nothing can be done. And I think that's an empirical question.
We did that to answer and add in the healthcare industry, we were incinerating everything, right? Pathological waste, chemical waste. Now there are hardly any incinerators for healthcare waste anywhere. It's not so much the incineration, it's the temperature. At what temperature can we kill everything? That's really the question. So if we can get to that temperature, well, we could reach that temperature in an autoclave, we could reach that temperature in a composter. How about this? We compost all the food waste, turn it into a fertilizer, interface into the natural landscape of the airport. Stop using toxic fertilizers. I can crank a composter up to 300 degrees. Would that kill everything? Yes. So the idea is to go to the regulators and say, here's a slew of technologies in lieu of incineration. Which one would you like? Or let's use them all.
Yeah, all of these are very good points. It's worth recognizing as well that the regulation that was set was around two pathogens, African swine flu and foot and mouth. And then all the scientific analysis that's ever been done on catering waste, it's never been found in there at all. The other is, you're quite right, is a seed jumping across, but there's more chance of that happening by a passenger taking a gift. And we've got a big educational program that we need to do around that. But the key point around these technologies, as I understand it, is that you do need some standardization of the materials on board. We're all using anything that we want to at the moment. If somebody says, I want to use bamboo, sure, go ahead. Why don't you use a pine tree as well? Yeah, okay, I might have a go. There's nothing in there to standardize at all. And we've got to just try, and a bit like that graphic equalizer to it, can we all just agree this is the right substrates to have? They're sustainable at volume, at source, right the way through. And then can we match them up with the waste management practices that are out there and the direction of scientific travel and engage the regulator in saying there's no risk?
Yeah, and I think, Matt, the way the regulation is now, and we've seen this in other industries, what we've done in other industries is say, look, instead of telling us what we must do, tell us what we can't. And then that allows for a lot of innovation, right? So if it must be at a certain temperature, for example, fine. Let industry, let innovation run free, and we'll get to the right results.
Yeah. I'd like
Sarah,
to
let me... Sorry, Tony. Let's bring Sarah. She's got a question there. Did you have a question, or was it the lady behind you? Sorry.
Hi, Fernanda Vega from Caelis. Thank you, Matt, for bringing up this conversation. I'm very new to the topic, but I see it as we have a global problem and we are trying to solve it with local regulation. And who would be the organization responsible for those aviation waste? Why are they not? Well, does this organization exist?
It's a great question.
Are they
here? They are
here. And there is also on food waste while you're on board. Why are we not working with pre-ordering? Where is the technology? Why are the caterers not offering that possibility? Why they are putting so many constraints on how many people can pre-order? So I would like Mel to answer that question. Thank you.
I was just going to add that the regulator here is IATA, as far as regulatory change. They're the ones that have the primary. Joe's organization and others all have dialogue with the regulator, but that's the primary one for the type of change we're looking for. If you talk to John Godson there, who's the head of environment, he will turn around and say the regulator will listen, whether they'll do anything, but they'll listen, but we have to align as an industry on the solution that we want to present. If we continually present multiple solutions, they're not listening. And we need to wake up to that. So that's the answer to that bit. And then, Mel.
On the food waste, 100% pre-selection or pre-order is definitely the way to go. We're trying to tackle it in two ways. One, which is if we have food left, please come and have some more. And the other is that we will be introducing pre-selection. But it's trying to find the balance of how the crew can manage it, because if, you know, 200 people pre-select on the flight, it's very difficult for the crew to manage it. So we've been doing lots of trials to see how we can make it work, but 100% you're right, pre-selection is definitely the way to go for it.
And I agree. I'd like to add something here, Fernanda. I think to my previous point of supply chain and interests of the different stakeholders, the caterer is, of course, not in a, let's say, delightful position to enable pre-order, because it would mean they would have to board less food than they do today.
Joe, let's just bring you in quickly. What time do we finish the session?
So Joe Leader, I'm CEO of Apex and IFSA. So with my IFSA hat on for a second, let me just say, I mean, in terms of food waste, I think we're at step one. I mean, right now I'm so frustrated that within the European Union, we can't get basic composting done while we're in the EU, more or less changing regulations. So when we talk about IATA, I think we need to take ourselves back to the basics first before we go further afield. In terms of automation, JetBlue is a great example of catering on demand and actually having it be less. So they're a great company that people are emulating. But jumping to a question, because I wanted to go to AI for a second, put on my Apex hat. So we had a problem on board in that we have lots of cameras on board many in-flight entertainment systems, all of which we had to put camera covers over because people were paranoid that, you know, not the camera on your phone, but the camera in your screen would somehow be watching you. When we talk about AI and food utilization, I think of two dangerous things. Number one is passengers are really uncomfortable about cameras watching them. We can put them on trolleys, but anytime we do that, we add weight. And the weight differentials on board are so slight that any gain that we get from food savings could actually be completely eliminated by the amount of fuel that that aircraft burns over the year. So I wanted to ask my colleague at Iberia, how do you solve for that? Because I've heard, this discussion of AI, I like, but I'm trying to figure out what on earth, what camera we're going to be using on board without adding weight and making passengers paranoid.
Thank you, Joe. I actually think we don't need to have the cameras on the aircraft. I think the technology already exists to be in the catering unit. They see absolutely everything. And I think we've actually been talking about it today, that we can probably do everything in the catering unit, because 100% we don't want to put any more weight on the aircraft at all. And caterers, yes, they don't have an interest in reducing the food waste, but there are other things we can do. There are other ways we can still improve the customer experience by reducing the weight. So for me, the answer is in the catering unit, not on the aircraft.
Yeah. And the data is aggregated, right? So it's not, nobody's watching a particular person and what they're eating or not eating, right? So it's what's gone on to the plane, what's come off, right? And if we're starting to see those patterns, that people are not eating certain things, there may be some opportunities. And I hear you, Melanie, on needing to make sure customer service comes first, but that's not to say that we can't learn from things we do every day.
Yeah,
right?
I think the AI should be off the plane, and we're actually putting one at JFK right now in the kitchen as a pilot, and it'll be fascinating to see what kind of data and analytics we'll get from it.
Yeah, there's also, it's starting to emerge, Joe, on analyzing the blue bags. Again, it goes down to, if we could just standardize around some of the materials, AI can be used to spot that and then flick it off into a certain bin, and we get to a much lower cost of waste separation, which then facilitates recycling. So I do think we're at the beginning of a wave in that area. We've got time for one more. Yeah.
My name is Arda. I have a small Instagram page, and the name is Arda the Traveler. And as you mentioned, Melanie, you are recycling the newspapers and magazines. It is also possible to upload on an app, and everyone can use it as many times as they want. And some airlines, they are also offering this kind of services.
We offer it too. We have hundreds of different sustainability initiatives. So, but we digital press. We replaced all of the newspapers and magazines just before COVID. So we have a full digital press offer. But we do. I mean, many people still come on board with newspapers and magazines. So we recycle those.
Can I ask one more thing? One airline, they are also start to offering reusable plastic cups in economy class. It would be also a good opportunity or a good alternative to paper cups.
That's something that I've already mentioned. There's many arguments against, for and against disposable versus rotable. Because disposable, you have to ship it all over the world, so you need a lot more, it takes up a lot more space, you have to ship it worldwide. Whereas rotable, yes, you need less, and you don't have to ship as many all over the world, but then you're washing it and putting chemicals into the water. So it's really tricky. In fact, in the summer, we're going to be launching a new initiative that for the shorter flights where we sell, if you bring your own cup, then you can have a cheaper tea and coffee. So we're going to try and encourage people to do things differently, act differently in that way.
Thank you for answering my questions.
And thank you all for listening to that session, and hopefully it was useful and you can take some threads back with you and some stats back with you. I think, without putting words into the mouth of my panel, and they can nod yes or no, but I think we're hearing we need better data to understand what we're working with. We need better cohesion and collaboration across the supply chain, which is a point you were making, Anne, and others. And we need to actually open our eyes up to some of the solutions that are out there, and as an industry come together around those solutions that can help us with that regulatory change that we need. But we will not solve the problem, I don't think, we don't think, by perhaps working individually. Initiatives are great, but they need to be sustained in the right way. Thank you.
Thank you.
I look forward to the session this afternoon.